We are the ink to the page, your pen land the punch. Onomatopoeia, pal, we got the stuff. We know they got story, been new, they got hot. Complex narratives and black carries, tell me where they see us. Where I see us, where I see us, they wanna be us. But tell me where they read us, not they wanna be us. Out the damn cage like a nigga from Georgia. Insane and out the brain and lacking in origin. Act flashbacks and shots to the system. Downloading new issues and sitting for a listen. Where I see us, where I see us, they wanna be us. But tell me where they read us, not they wanna be us.
They wanna be us, they
wanna be us.
Where I see us, where I see us,
where I see us. Where I see us, where I see us.
Welcome back to another episode of Where I See Me, the podcast where we look at comics and media with lots of questions in mind, mainly where the hell are all the black and brown people? I'm Jamie.
And I am Marcellus.
And this is season 4, episode 8. It feels weird. Like, we've already on episode 8. I feel like, I don't know. Does it feel like it should be episode 8 to you?
It feels like time is a flat circle, and every time a new number comes up for the episode, it feels like episode 2. And I'm very confused, but nonetheless, we're here.
We are here. We are here. How have you been?
I've been all right. I am, once I get grades in this week, I am done for the academic year, and it feels nice to have a little additional agency to do research and to relax. Got some snacking, some movie watching to do, but I'm feeling good. How are you, James?
I'm doing good. Speaking of movie watching, what did I watch last night? Have you ever seen this animated thing called Heavy Metal?
Yes.
I watched that, like, in Heavy Metal 2000.
What made you want to watch Heavy Metal?
I don't know. I think it popped up on my Amazon Prime, like, recommendations, like, for animation. And I was like, what did I watch animated on Amazon Prime that is telling me to watch Heavy Metal? Because I had literally watched The Lost City with Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum before. And I'm like, how is this? This is not even related. I bet. Okay.
Did you like it?
I.
Oh, no.
Did I like Lost City or did I like Heavy Metal?
I'm gonna say both. I wanna the best double feature.
The Lost City was cute. I was like, I haven't seen Sandra Bullock in a rom-com in a very long time. So that was cute. Heavy Metal, I was just kind of like, what is this? Like, what am I watching? And it was like vignettes, right? Loch Nahr, that little green orb, like causing chaos and killing people and being evil. And then in Heavy Metal 2000 was like more of a straight storyline that was kind of related, but not really. But I was like, why is there so much new? I was like, there's so much nudity and so much like, what is it? Like sex scenes and like, oh, this is not for children. But you know, I feel like the '80s, that was like a time period where, you saw a lot of like animation that was not for children, and then they were like definitely trying to do that. And then it was also like a lot of this kind of Hercules, Conan the Barbarian, Beastmaster s like prehistoric mankind, brute strength, all that kind of stuff. I feel like that we need to talk about that, like fantasy and like how race is dealt with that.
Ooh.
But that's another episode, because that's not what we're talking about today. Maybe next episode.
Yeah, next episode. Goodness. Well, as far as what we're talking about today, we're trying to break down and understand, or I guess at least give our takes in regards to I guess you could describe it as a bit of a movement, but more of a mentality, an ideology of Black joy.
Yes.
What is that? What does that mean? Because I feel like we've touched on joy in media that has Black representation, mm-hmm. but I think it's one thing to have a range of emotions for characters. Because speak for myself, talk about the idea of, like, can't Black people just, like, exist or mm-hmm. be, like, at peace in something. But I feel like that's different than, like, hashtag Black joy.
Oh, yeah. It has definitely become something that in the past 3 years has become more of the forefront. And I think people have found ways to, like, capitalize mm-hmm. off of it. In a way that feels, I don't know, like feels, I want to say counterproductive in some ways. But yeah, I looked up the definition of joy, and joy as from Oxford's Languages Dictionary.
Shout out to Oxford.
I guess they are
for the,
right.
For the one time.
Just once. Joy, a feeling of great pleasure and happiness. That's it. That's the definition.
I'd like to retract the shout out to Oxford.
Let's see. Does Merriam have any other definitions?
Merriam's got to have something.
Where's Merriam-Webster? Merriam. Girl, what you say joy is? Merriam had provided three different definitions. And she says... And I'm this is very like assumptive of me to assume Merriam-Webster was a woman. Most likely it's not a woman, but I whatever. Merriam-Webster defines joy as the emotion evoked by well-being, success, or good fortune, or by the prospect of possessing what one desires. The B level definition, the expression or exhibition of such emotion. Then definition two says a state of happiness or felicity, which people should bring back the word felicity. Felicity is not like a word people use that much anymore. Felicity. Like the TV. Do you remember? Did you ever watch the TV show Felicity?
That's how I know that word. When you said bring back the word, I was like, the word?
Yeah, it's a word for like happiness. And then another definition, a source of cause or of delight. And then as a verb, to experience great pleasure or delight. So Merriam has a superior definition. I think the first definition definitely fits with, I think, with how Black joy is being thought of. Mm-hmm. The emotion invoked by well-being, success, or good fortune, or by the prospect of possessing what one desires. Well, I don't know. Okay. I'm curious. Curious to hear, because I'm saying that, but now I'm having second thoughts about it.
Second thoughts about its accuracy
in regards to how to define Black joy.
I think it's hard because there is this connection that feels like when, let's say, you know, just in thinking about specifically just the media that's kind of been popular in the past mm-hmm. Couple years that hones in on Black joy. I feel like some have, they've been really well received and for good reason, but when people label them as having Black joy, be a focus or a main sort of theme, it's not the only thing they are. And they feel, I think there are episodes of series that kind of align themselves with the same sort of Black joy movement, where it's like it has to be a celebration, it has to be a moment, and then the mm-hmm. rest of everything is like, okay, well, no, now we've left the joy, mm-hmm. and there has to be a degree of struggle. But there are a few shows that I think are this slice of life enough mm-hmm. that it's like, oh no, you do have what you need, and I think it's not. It's that Cosby Show level of like day-to-day problems are about mm-hmm. all you have to worry about, which I don't know. It feels like it's a little outside of when I see people talk about joy, it's always a, it's, thinking back to last episode, it's having a brand new day, dancing around, mm-hmm. doing backflips off of tables. But I feel like Abbott Elementary is a show I think of with Black Joy, where they do have a lot of issues they have to work through, but most of the time, via supporting each other, they get the thing they need or they find a pivot.
Right.
And I feel like that's like a more honest sort of joy, like a natural one that mm-hmm. comes up.
I also think the existence of this show in general is, you know, has been a source of a lot of joy for a lot of Black people, especially absolutely. Like seeing it on Twitter, people talk about the show. And there often will be this dialogue, right, where people are trying to pitch ideas to Quinta Brunson about like what the next episode should be. And then, you know, some of it is like cute, funny stuff. And then some of it's like people wanting to add more like drama and suffering to the show. And then there'll always be that person that comes in and says like, why do you want Black elementary school children to suffer? Like, why are you why are you trying to add this layer of trauma to a show? It's a comedic show. It's a sitcom. It's on for 30 minutes. Why are you trying to add this extra thing to it? And when it's really, you know, a source of like kind of just joy and like television that you can just kind of tune in and watch, mm-hmm. And the characters feel very fleshed out and familiar. But yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to like cut you off because you were about to list another show. But
I was just thinking about a lot of these end up being comedies, or if anything, there is a layer of drama. Like when I tried to, because my mind always goes to like animation and things like that. Mm-hmm. So like I kept them first off, came, you know, just Abbott Elementary, but then thinking of Craig of the Creek, thinking about thinking about the, and I mentioned it last time and I still can't remember the name of the show, but there's a Marvel animated show, little girl with the afro puff, she has like a dinosaur.
You still don't know the name?
I looked it up and I forgot. It's just not sticking to my brain, but I feel like there are a lot of shows that they are either meant to be educational or they are meant to be comedies and they focus in on joy. But there are also some of those dramas where I think the idea that in the end, it's like knowing in the end we are safe or we are strong enough to overcome, there's a little celebration. Like, did you ever watch that show Raising Dion?
I didn't, but I know the show. I never got around to watching it.
It's got that normal little superhero drama, like, oh, betrayal, growth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's loss in that show, but I feel like there's a focus point on, like, this child is the future. There's an element of, like, rallying around that. But I feel like there is so much time spent on, now that we have tackled adversity, we are safe. It's a brand new day.
Mm.
And I really do prefer the, I guess I would say, interpretation that joy is not a necessity, more so. And I think like the Oxford definition where it talks about happiness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if joy and happiness really are the same thing. If joy is to have happiness, I feel like joy doesn't sound sustainable to me.
You know, I think back to my church days and pastors, and I feel like almost every Black pastor has ever said this. And I think it's also partly to do with Mays featuring Frankie Beverly's Joy and Pain, the song. But that joy is something, so the joy and happiness are different. Like, they've often talked about happiness being fleeting because it's mm-hmm. this kind of feeling, whereas joy is something that comes deep from within the soul. But I mean, if we're going with Miriam's definition, Miriam is also talking about joy as a feeling, and we know feelings are fleeting. They're constantly evolving. They're constantly changing. So it's not something that is permanent. It is ephemeral to have joy. It's something that comes to you in the moment, I would think. Kind of, I guess, like the song, Joy and Pain, like sunshine and rain. You know, like it's this kind of like yin and yang balance of life, the life of a lived experience, and that there is joy and pain. But I think particularly for Black people, there seems to be an exorbitant amount of pain and suffering. And so the joy, I think, has to, in a way, come out really extreme, I think, sometimes. And maybe to a point where, you know, there it doesn't come out in a way, I don't know. I'm just thinking really about like the video I sent you on Twitter about the people protesting at in Tallahassee, Florida. Tallahassee, if you didn't know, for our listeners, is the capital of Florida, which is so wild to me because it's all the way up in the panhandle. And like, it's so disconnected. It feels really disconnected from the rest of the state.
It's lower Alabama.
It really is. No, it's lower Georgia. It's
lower
Georgia because they literally share their news with Valdosta and Thomasville, Georgia. I live there. They literally all share their news together. But there's like this video that was trending on Twitter, and it had the hashtag Joyful Resistance. And it was like a group of like Black people in front of the Capitol building, which is a weird looking building with these ugly looking awnings on them. I always thought those things were ugly. And the way that city is situated, like you can't, like if you're on Appalachian Parkway, you got to like drive up and you just, first thing you hit is the Capitol building. But it's them in front of the Capitol building, swag surfing. And it's just kind of like, but it's like also, but you know, people were asking questions in the quote tweets. They're like, what are they protesting? And they're like, some people are like, this is the worst, generation of Black people ever. This is coming from other Black people. They're like, what? They're like, then there's someone, I think you sent me the one where someone was like, protesting used to be really meaningful. And now they're out here doing stuff like this. And so, you know, I don't know. And I don't know if they ever answered. And I guess I should just go to the tweet. I was like, I don't know if they ever answered, like, what they were actually protesting. Do you remember?
I could figure it out. Okay. All I knew was that they could swag surf.
Poorly, by the way. Yeah. As some people were pointing out, they were swag surfing very poorly. There wasn't that many of them out there. I'm looking at the video again. And it was like this white guy who posted it talking about outside the Florida Capitol right now. It's very few people there protesting. But in the same breath, I think there was another video circulating of the Democrats and the Republicans line dancing in this Florida Capitol building. And so after they had passed all this really restrictive abortion laws, book banning, anti-LGBTQIA laws, you know, and even to the point where they're like about to pass, they're trying to pass something against Greek life, for like the Divine Nine. You know, they were in that session and they ended because they all worked together and they got to come back together, even though they just ruined a lot of people's lives. And so they were in there doing the Cupid shuffle. Did you see that?
No? I did see the video, and I in my mind I was like, I am dreaming.
No.
I'm dreaming, and this is the part they use to wake me up because it's stupid enough. It's not real. This is the Morse coded message through the radio telling me I've been in a coma. How we could reach a point where, like, I think protests and politicians looks like the same thing in terms of meaningful human gestures. And it's not across the board, because, you know, you do have, it's, I think when you were saying before, the tweet that I had sent you where someone was like, this is, we used to have meaningful resistance.
Mm-hmm.
For every black and white picture of a Black Panther with like a rifle who looks so serious, there's a picture of them smiling somewhere.
Yeah.
So, like, don't get it twisted. Like, you don't gotta go, you don't have to live 13 years a slave to like be worthy of the rights that that you should have. But I think you're right. Like, the idea that, you know, there's not many people there in that video.
Mm-hmm.
And even the way it's organized, like, you can't block party your way into a lot of these things.
And you know, another quote tweet was like, did they have a permit? Because you do need a permit to be out in front of the Capitol building, which, again, me and you have talked about this way before we started the podcast, during 2020, when Houston was doing their protests.
Their parade.
It was a parade, right? Because it was in me and Marcellus we've talked about this, and we've talked about how there's a difference between a demonstration, a protest, a parade, a march, you know, all of these things. This is all of these things are used
interchangeably.
It's synonymous, but they are not. A parade, of course, is in collaboration with the state. You have permits. You are supposed to be there. You know, in Houston, a lot of people came out for George Floyd, and it was organized by, you know, local leaders. Mm-hmm. The mayor was in on it. Art Acevedo's ass was, you know, taking a knee with people who were protesting in quotation marks. You know, it was a spectacle. You had that dude who runs, I was about to call his restaurant Chicken Club. it'd be so funny if this was the episode that we got in trouble for because we mentioned them.
Turkey Hood gang coming at you.
They got bigger issues. They got bigger fish to fry than us. But you know, they rode out there on their horses and did the Black Power, like raised the Black Power fans, and then went home. You know, and there were a thousand. You went to the march parade thing. I didn't go, the way I think about protests is like protests. You're not supposed to get arrested, but being arrested is a part of a protesting. And I was like, I don't want a record.
It's hard because that's fair. That's valid. That's very valid. Because I remember that experience and thinking, this is a parade.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to the I'm assuming like the city hall, the central area, mm-hmm. all the like large fountains. You know, can't really hear the people talking well because they ain't got the sound system.
Mm-hmm.
Set up in such a way that you can hear everybody easily. Got some megaphones going on. Bun B shows up, talking about, hey, everybody! And then, like, Bun B leaves.
And then they bring out Reverend Lawson, bless his heart. They wheeled him out there. Who, for those of you who don't know, Reverend Lawson was the pastor of Wheeler Avenue Baptist Church in Houston, Texas, which was one of the only, if not the only, church that would allow Dr. Martin Luther King to speak at his church because everybody else was scared, which, you know, I mean, it's 1960s. I don't know. I'm not mad at people like for being scared because the fear is real. Like, you don't want your church to be burned down. You don't want your congregation to be harmed. But somebody does have to be brave and I'm, you know, as we know, bravery is not the absence of fear. It's just pushing through it. Mm-hmm. You know, so they brought him out to speak. And it's like, you know, why is there a program at a protest? Like, why are we having
people? Minute by minute.
I was like, this is planned. And I think I remember we talked about, like, did they ever go inside the actual City Hall building?
No, the police were there. They were like, you can't go inside. That's not how this works.
Yeah.
And even get, like, you couldn't really, if you weren't with those main people, you couldn't even get up to, like, the stage area for, like, really. You had to be a part of that entourage. And then once they left, like, people lingered for a second, and it went from parade to, like, okay, march. Because it was, like, there was no clear leader, so people were just marching down, like, two roads ish it branched off. Some people went on to the freeway. I don't know if that was the same day, could be the next day, but it kept going. And the farther we got from the light of the sanctioned sort of like allowed time, the more it turned from like, okay, this is a march, because clearly it's for something, it's for someone, it's for a cause. But protest is when you start actually causing the disruptions, actually starting to have, I think, more clear goals. And some people had goals. And some people didn't. And that's why we had that whole, like, I'm sure you saw it on the news, like, a bunch of skateboarders. Like, the police were agitating people in different areas. And skateboarders went, you don't get to agitate us. We agitate you. and beat a police car with their skateboards. And that started to enter the realm of like, okay, this is a little violent.
Now we're getting to a riot.
Now we push back protests a little bit. And I feel like there were some people who saw images online of what does a protest look like and were receiving, oh, we riot. While other people were truly trying to protest. Because I remember even during the parade portion, and that sticks so strong in my mind, there was, you know, sort of elder Black people who, you know, I'm sure would see themselves as like, I'm a pillar of my community, I'm here, I'm representing, but also respectability politics, and like, don't give anyone a reason. And there were young white people there who were like, I am the community, I am the reason we fight. And they were like, some girl had on like a mask, like a bandana. Granted, cause also COVID.
Yeah.
But blacked out, and she had spray paint. It was trying to spray paint some, because the windows were boarded up, mind you, all the way up, in case things turned into a hairier situation, which I'm sure wasn't something businesses just did. I'm sure the police said do this.
Yes.
Because they knew. And we're very prepared for trouble, or even to start trouble.
Exactly. But this
woman kept trying to spray paint like Anarchy A or something, or like BLM. And it was the most ironic thing to see during this quote unquote sort of like celebration of, I would say, if anything, even if it wasn't meaningful like resistance, a celebration of George Floyd.
Of his life.
And then see a white woman trying to sort of be like, we're doing this, we're burning it down. Mm-hmm. And all these Black people be like, stop that. Like, that's not what this is. And she was like, gonna cry, like, leave me alone. Stop. Leave me. It was like, she felt attacked. And people were like, you just gotta not do that. That's, you do that on your own time. And she, like, do that when the sun goes down. But, and she, you could tell that she was like conflicted and a little bit like afraid of the people she's supposed to be standing up for. So like this was the environment, and I feel like the focus was on, I don't know if like truth per se, but they were trying to maintain that joy element while a lot of people were there. Either did not seem very joyful, or they were very much like, no, yeah, I'm into this idea that we can will ourselves through the pain that is kind of being inflicted on us as a community.
The National Museum of African American History and Culture has an article on their website that talks about joy and resistance, and it's got quotes from different people. And so the founder of the Black Joy Project is quoted as saying, Black joy is not dismissing or creating an alternative Black narrative that ignores the reality of our collective pain. Rather, it is about holding the pain and injustice in tension with the joy we experience. It's about using that joy as an entry into understanding the oppressive forces we navigate through as a means to imagine and create a world free of them. There's something kind of Afrofuturistic too about.
I agree.
That definition, right? Because we're using joy as a tactical tool to project ourselves into the future, right? Like having hope for what is to come, that there will be a reality in which we don't have to deal with these things at the time. And I think that, you know, when we talk about Black joy, and then also like with the protesting and resistance and things, like there is some, I have two things. Okay. Like, so, you know, that summer in 2020, I think that there was a lot of like, there was so much respectability to politics about how to protest, right? Yeah. And of course, you're going to have state officials, city officials tell you how to protest. But a protest is supposed to be in opposition to the state, you're not supposed to be working and it's supposed to disrupt, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so for instance, Jordan Neely, who was murdered on the subway in New York, I think at the time that this will be released, maybe 2 weeks ago, you know, people in New York got on the railway. You know, they weren't breaking anything, they didn't hurt anyone, but they disrupted. That is a protest, right? Like, you're disrupting daily operations of this system that oppresses you. Like, that is, you know, that is what a protest is. A march, you know, brings attention to a situation. You're marching awareness. You're bringing attention to a situation. Demonstration, I feel like that's when you have things like a die-in, you know?
Yeah,
like,
it's almost, I feel like it's like a demonstration makes me think of somewhere halfway between like performance not a march per se, but like, I think it's performance. It's supposed to bring up the emotions. It's like the same way if you enter a church while they're in mid-song, you might be filled with like, whoa, this is like, this is spiritual. Like, the energy is there because they're acting on something. I don't know if you've ever, have you seen a die-in before?
Just on Pose, not in real life.
That's going to be my answer for a lot of questions now. Just on Pose.
But I mean, you know, and I taught performance art at my former employer. Oh, that's the other thing, y'all. I got a new job. I'm moving. Oh, we'll talk about it later. But at my former university, I taught performance and video art. And on the first day, I always showed this video of this man named Daniel Ulfelder, who dressed as the Grim Reaper and walked along the beaches in Florida during COVID, because Florida did not shut down. And like, or they shut down for like a month and they were like, people want to go to the beach. Floridians love the beach. They love the beach. They cannot live without the beach. And mind you, they're a peninsula. They're surrounded by water. But he would, and you know, he didn't nearly like interact with anyone. He just, you know, it was just this kind of silent demonstration of him walking up and down the beach dressed as the Grim Reaper. And, you know, some people paid attention to it. Some people didn't. But, you know, the people asked him, they're like, why are you doing this? And he was like, I just want to remind people that we're moving too fast and that there are people dying from COVID and that he was like, I love the beaches, but I want us to enjoy the beaches safely. And so we should close and, you know, and wait until there is, you know, more information, you know, or what have you. But, you know, that I show my students because I'm like, this is something that is like, it's like a protest or it's like a demonstration. But it also, there's an aspect of performance to it, right? That there are things that happen in our daily life that definitely fit in the realm of performance art. And so, yeah, there is an element of performance art, I think, to demonstrations. And then also, I mean, what was it, a rally? Rally, I always think rally like revving, like engines, like, revving, like you know, like motorcycle rally. Drag racing. I don't know why. I think of cars and like, automobiles, vehicles. But the new Black Panther Party had a rally in 2020, I was like, and I remember just keep seeing all this language. I'm like, what do all these words mean? Yeah. Like rally, protest, march, demonstration, resistance, you know? The second thing that I wanted to mention is that I think there's some ahistorical aspects to resistance, right? That people are trying to make it more capitalist. And then, you know, and it's just like, oh, that does not go together, baby. Like, that's, you know, capitalism and resistance don't go together. That's, you can't do resistance in a, and be a cat. Like, those things don't work. I think people aren't aware of what revolution really takes, like what you have to do. I had a student in my class. She was like, they need to bring back assassinations. And you know, I'm standing there and I'm like, I mean, these are things that people did, you know, to move shit forward. Like, we've done it, we voted. And you know, that is the media and mainstream media will always tell us we just need to vote. That voting will solve all our problems. Like, voting, we need to get out and vote. And you're always trying to make it seem like not enough of us vote. And surely enough, there are people who do not exercise their right. But voting alone, I don't think it's going to get us anywhere. There has to be some meaningful change, and that has to come from either impeaching people, actual like protest that disrupts the systems, and so that they cannot function, right? Because as soon as you start affecting people's ability to make money in a capitalist society, they listen to you. They either listen to you or they respond violently. There's it can go one of two ways. And so, you know, for Black joy to be commodified in a way that, I don't know, it feels really delicate, which feelings are fleeting, ephemeral. It would make sense if it would be really delicate to try and like align Black joy. I don't know. There's something, I keep thinking back to like those young people in Tallahassee swag surfing outside the Capitol with their permit. I'm assuming they had a permit. Then having like also the people who passed the laws also line dancing inside doing the Cupid Shuffle. Like there's a disconnect there, right? There's something not, I don't know the words, but it's very surreal in a way. Like, it's just not, I don't know. It feels, I guess I want to say counterproductive in a way. And I'm sure there are people who probably like, we can party and sing and dance at these protests, and you can, but are you disrupting?
Yeah. Actually do the protest.
Yeah. Like, are you actually disrupting daily functions? Can they get things done with you out there? I don't know.
I also feel like there is this, the idea that you even have to have Black joy within resistance rather than, and this is not to say, right, not to detract from the what is valid about, you know, focusing in on Black joy, but I feel like the idea of just trying to bolster the overall quality of life in your Black existence.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like people, it almost makes me think of like, if you have a bad time at a protest, I don't think that detracts from how effective the protests are.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. You can be like, damn, I was out here for 4 hours in the sun. This sucks. That's what, like, even, I think even thinking about, like, a good way to structure, and I think sometimes we get caught up, especially just because we're talking about Black specific joy, Black joy, and sort of in the face of institutions and oppression and things mm-hmm. like that. But when you have oppression of any sort of group, even outside of marginalized, even just of, like, a working class structure, if you have a union and they protest, that always looks ugly.
Mm-hmm.
There is rarely a dance party at a union picket line. And that's because you mess with people's money.
Mm-hmm.
And they get extra serious. But I think that same level of, you know, hey, we're here to make sure we have joy at the end.
Mm.
Is something I wish spread out more. But because like I'm thinking like the like right now we have the Writers Guild Association.
Oh yeah. Which,
you know how many people it took to shut down one production in LA? It was like a Netflix production, I think.
No, how many?
There was three people there, and the granted, not every strike in its vicinity has that. There's more people, I think, in different places.
Oh, of course, yeah.
The crew was like, we're not crossing the picket line. There was more solidarity in that, and so I think the intention of like, oh, we need to focus on this, is a little sharper. And I wish Black Joy focused more on like, eat the vegetables first. If it's going to be aligned with protest, if it's just Black Joy, go ahead, swag surf off.
Yeah,
that's fine. But like, if it has to have, I do feel like the article you mentioned feels like a great interpretation of like what Joy is as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
But when you misuse tools, I think you cause damage.
Exactly. I think that's a really good way to say it. Absolutely. Because I think, you know, in regards to protests, I think some people try to be comfortable while also trying to lead a revolution or a resistance. And if sci-fi has told us anything, resistance is not cute. You know, people are not, they're living underground. They're, you know, scraping together things for resources. It's not a good time. It's not a good time at all. And I think, you know, you'll have some Black people who will say, oh, well, we can be cute while we protest, or we can, you know, find joy in the things. But I think to really understand the issues at hand, I mean, it's to really be angry. Mm-hmm. And to take that anger and to use it productively in a way, and even me saying using it productively feels, I think, a little respectability politics-ish. And I mean in a sense that in using anger to get things done. And a la Orlando Jones in American Gods, right? He's like, anger gets shit done, okay? So there's something to be said about being angry and resisting. And, you know, there are all kinds of resistance. Joyful resistance, I think it has its place. But I think that there was something very kind of tone deaf about that particular video in Tallahassee, knowing that the politicians inside were also, had maybe the week before, during that week, also been line dancing together after mm-hmm. ruining people's lives and literally, you know, affecting people to the point where they people are fleeing Florida. So there's something, you know, I think there is space for joyful resistance, right? When people like want Black people to be unhappy, to be sad, to not, you know, and I think that comes up more in our like social interactions with people in the world, right? And that we're supposed to be just continuously downtrodden. Our ancestors were not continuously downtrodden. They were in a horrible situation, but they had a very rich interior world that kept them going. I just saw this film at Latin Wave at Museum of the Fine Arts Houston called Vicenta B by Carlos Lechuga. The main protagonist is Afro-Cuban woman who practices Santeria and is like, I think she's like a devotee of Yorisha Yemaya. And she goes to talk to like her great aunt about like, how come she's not hearing the spirits anymore? She's like a medium. She's not hearing, her son leaves and she can't hear the spirits anymore. And her grandmother or her great aunt like tells her, you know, how there are some people, like when they were brought, some of the African people, when they were brought to this island, they could not bear it and they killed themselves. Like they set themselves on fire, drowned themselves, all kinds of stuff like that. And then there were some who like really looked within, and their gods, their spirituality kept them going. And so I think, you know, Black Joy really, like going back to that kind of church, like joy is something that comes from deep within. You know, Black Joy really is something that it has to come out of us in this kind of resilience as a people that we have inherited over time. it definitely has a place, and I think in the revolution, but I think that we have to be really careful about how that shows up, and whether or not, I don't know, like, we just have to really be careful about how we're using it, because like you said, it's a tool, and tools can definitely be used improperly.
I always wonder what, and this, it could be pessimistic, but I think it's more realistic, but I always wonder what the line is in the sand, for like the general public. Mm-hmm. Kind of, I guess, backtracking to what your student said about needing to bring assassinations back. There's a couple countries where this, like, granted, I'm using countries that people in the U.S. I think would probably align themselves with more often. Just like countries like Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Was that last year?
Yes. And, you know, that's a country that doesn't have, like, civilians aren't supposed to have guns or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there's a pretty good-sized ban on a lot of firearms. That was made at home.
He 3D printed that gun.
You know how mad you gotta be to build a gun?
Mm-hmm.
But not to say that, you know, none of the sort of, I think, how do you operate and run society, and what are the values, and how do you get, it's not even about making everyone happy, it's like, how do you make sure no one burns it all down?
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something to be said about, like, what is, because, like, there was clearly a line there, at least enough for one person to be like, no more. Mm-hmm. not from that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it feels like sometimes there is a lot of anger. It's like this wax and wane of anger and happiness. Anger and happiness, celebration, destruction in the U.S. And I always wonder, like, there's people who are just, like, opposed to fascism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to be anti-fascist, I feel like is, you know, that in media, it can be controversial, but I feel like it's pretty straightforward. Like, I don't like Nazis, but I don't think I have yet to see someone in the U.S., at least on, like, public media, or even that could be, you know, maybe that's, like, private channels or something like that. But the idea of, you have to, like, take people out of power forcefully,
mm-hmm.
in an aggressive manner, because you're not going to get the chance to do it any other way. And so I am curious where the public sort of pivot, not away from joy, but towards other expressions of big emotions, because joy gets a really big stage.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's no real answer to that, but I am curious where the line in the sand will be, because I feel like presently there's a lot of, I think most of these sort of like joyful resistance examples we're thinking of have been in reaction to a lot of like loss, like death.
Yeah.
And not to say that the passing of laws doesn't sort of equate to very similar things, because it ripples out to people and affects people's lives and access to things. And sometimes I think about the minute it expands far enough to not just, you know, Black people's marginalized communities. I think once it starts to touch, I don't know, once we get to money again, or even just, there's a part of me that thinks about all of the sort of sci-fi interpretations of capitalism and power,
mm-hmm.
where companies become like, this hospital brought to you by McDonald's. Like, you know what I mean? Like, where it's like, minute you, like, speaking of Florida, DeSantis was like, we need to change up Disney. Disney's a little too friendly. Disney said, little boy, if you don't, slapped his wrist enough to be like, hey, did you see the, because there's a board of sort of directors, some sort of board meant to make decisions on the area of in Florida where Disney resides, where the park resides. And it can be, it's like a mixture of state and corporation. And DeSantis, anyone who's the governor of Florida, has the ability to sort of implement and suggest people in there. And he's essentially stacked the deck with, he has gotten most of his people on that board, and they work with Disney. And they can't do anything because Disney, anticipating everything,
of course,
made a clause where it's just like, well, you can't change anything without like our formal approval until, and then there's a, it's a clause in the contract that hasn't, they don't get used very often in most modern contracts, but essentially until the last member of the royal family dies.
Stop.
Like, it's more or less like, once Great Britain falls, you can do what you want to do. And they, like, legally, I'm sure they try to fight it, but the, I mean, board it, told him, like, we can't do anything. We're just here with our hands under our butts. There's no, there's nothing. Yeah, twiddle your thumbs. There's no. And Disney's kind of pushed back. Like, I feel like the future of resistance has to probably end up being against corporations, because I feel like corporations are going to create the line in the sand where maybe you don't feel comfortable right now. You know, maybe the swag surf in front of the capital of any state is where a lot of people are at, but I'm sure once Walmart City Hall becomes big, like, people will get a little less, because people go into stores and just throw things. I feel like once America becomes the corporation that it tries to be, there might be a change, but I'm just so curious, because for now it's this kind of trying to figure out what does it mean to be responsible and not, I think, what's the word? Ineffective. Because you can be responsible without having to lean into respectability. Like, safety and you know, making sure your community is cared for. That brings me joy.
I'm trying to think. What brings me joy? Like, rest.
Rest. Shout out to Rest for the one time.
Not working. Shout out to the woman who runs the Nap Ministry. I think her ministry, like, she is slow. I think for the past couple of years, she has slowly, one post at a time, really shifted people's mindsets about work and labor and rest. And I often think about the fact, like, Americans get this rap for being like a workaholic country. Like, we don't take enough, we don't have enough holidays, we don't have enough vacations. And I think if, you know, people really think back to what America was when the British stepped foot on this land and started displacing the indigenous people, it was a colony. And a colony's job is to work, extract resources, and send it back to mother country. And we just never, even though 1776 happened, we just never left that mentality of work and, like, extracting the resources. Only now the country keeps the resources, but they're only for a very select few of people. And so I value rest. I value not doing anything. And, you know, some of the forms of resistance of our ancestors, enslaved ancestors, they would, like, break tools so things could get done. You know, it's very, some things are, like, again, disruptive. But it's like, who broke this? We don't know who broke it. It's just broken now. We don't know. You know? The woman working in the house, they're always talking about, like, how the house slaves had it better. But the house, the woman doing the cooking poisons the master. Like, you know, it's a lot of, there's a lot of other ways, which, you know, that's going more in line with assassination, poisoning the master. But, you know, there's a lot of ways to resist in our daily life. I think we just have to find ways to do it. It's not, I don't think that if you're, I feel like resistance is not necessarily supposed to be comfortable,
But I think you do feel a sense of dignity because you're not complying. Mm-hmm. That is probably the feeling you have more than anything, the dignity, the integrity of not complying with this thing that is trying to crush you. And that, I think, that can bring you a lot of joy, but non-compliance. So, you know? But do you have any final thoughts?
I am happy to be alive in this moment, able to share space with you, Jamie. This podcast brings me joy. And I feel like we get to have our, I love talking to you. And I feel like it's also nice to be able to periodically delve so far into topics that, you know, we learn new things.
Mm-hmm.
And then people can learn things via our conversations. But more than anything, I feel like I get joy from doing this with you. And that is my resistance to any sort of daily grind is doing things like this that fill the cup back up. Granted, we still work, so you should share and follow and like and subscribe and all that stuff. But
exactly,
but the act of sharing time with you is joy. That's my final thought.
I mean, how do I even follow that? I concur 100%. When you said, you know, we still work, it reminded me of that TikTok of this girl. She lives in Houston. Not me telling this girl's business, but she said she lived in Houston on TikTok. But she was like, Karl Marx was absolutely spitting, but I do have to find a way to make this money by tomorrow. Which, you know, I mean, that is the predicament we are in, right? Like, he was definitely spinning on some, you know, the working class people need to come together, but like, we still gotta pay bills. But we want to thank you all so much for listening, and as Marcellus has already said, please follow me. If you're not following us on social media, make sure that you do that. We're on TikTok, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, at Where I See Me Podcast on TikTok, and we're at Where I See Me on Twitter and Instagram. Rate, comment, and subscribe. It really helps us, right? Especially with the ad revenue. Really helps us. So please, you know, make sure that you are doing all those things. It really keeps us, it also helps us understand like what you are interested in listening to. And it gives us feedback so that we can progress. I mean, we're going to progress whether or not, but mm-hmm. with or without your feedback, but it is nice to hear what our listeners care about and what you would like for us to talk about.
I want to give a nice shout out to Playdate, our friends of the podcast who provide the funky fresh tunes that we end all of our recordings out on. Their song, Why Don't We Talk About It. They have new music out and about coming out now on many of the stream platforms, Apple Music, Spotify, and the like. So give them a listen. As always, I have been Marcellus.
And I have been Jamie.
Stay nerdy.
And stay black.
And stay
Why?